Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Resurrected Winners You podcast. If this is your first time listening, think of us as your friendly neighborhood video game book club coming together to discuss a specific, I find that hard to say, game each and every episode, dismantling and picking at the carcass to bring you some juicy morsels of discussion. We talk ins, we talk outs, and if you're lucky, we might even have a little bit of fun along the way. Whether you've played the game alongside us in anticipation of the podcast, whether you've played the game before, or even if the game is nestled comfortably in your pile of shame, there'll be something here for you. So be rest assured we have you covered. And booming the episode into your earholes this week is me, David, alongside your friendly neighbourhood borderline weeb, Mr. Alex Aldrich. How are you doing today, mate? And don't worry, there isn't anyone else here for this week for us to forget that I've asked you that question before we move on.
Yeah, exactly. No one's going to steal my thunder of Ange mania. I'm well. I'm excited for the episode number.
What number are we on? 60 something. Four?
Yeah. So people will have already heard it in the intro, but I've now just decided that all the little radio bits are going to be N64 music.
Oh, brilliant. I can't wait for that.
Yeah. So, landmark. This is the landmark we needed to get to all along. This is the we've hit it at our peak. It's a shame we're not doing the banjo episode on episode 64, but you can't win everything.
No.
You can't plan everything perfectly.
No. It's from a sort of, I don't know, when was this, like a 90s era is trying to evoke? Is that fair?
Yeah.
I was trying to think of like the era that Doom and, I don't know, is it more Doom or Quake?
Probably. Well, it's hard to say. I've been thinking about that myself, actually, because I did see somebody say it's like Doom and Quake, and I kept thinking, but they're not the same.
No. And Doom, remember when we were, what was the game that we were playing? Was it maybe even a Doom? Oh, it was Doom 64.
Yeah.
And then I started going back to play the old Doom games. The old Doom games are not, I mean, they are quick and they are action-packed, but they're not in the same way as like the sort of modern boomer shooter is, if that makes sense. Like they are,
yeah, the modern boomer shooter does it on purpose. They just try and turn it up to 11, don't they?
Whereas Quake does do that,
and Quake obviously had polygonal models and fully sort of 3D environments, whereas Doom did not. It was all sprite scaling. So
it's a chicken and the egg though, is question, isn't it? Because Quake probably doesn't exist without Doom.
No, 100%.
I wish it was called Boom.
I mean, they really missed a trick now, looking back.
Yeah, looking back when they were going to rename the genre after the age of the people that play these games, they should have called it Boom.
Boomers probably played this game they probably played Doom when Doom came out. Maybe that's why they call it that. I would accept that.
Yeah,
if they're saying it's for boomers in the 90s, because like my dad, for example, is a boomer. He would have played this, maybe. Yeah, I played it, so he must have given it to me. So, but we're not boomers, so we're not modern boomer shooters.
No,
are not for boomers.
We're dirty avocado munching millennials, aren't we?
So. We are. My daughter is Gen Alpha.
I found that the other day.
Yeah, the fuck is that? They're an
millennials is probably at least sounds quite good, because what's after us? Gen Z or something like that?
Yeah, we're Gen Y, aren't we? Technically.
Oh, are we? Yeah. Well, I guess so.
Yeah, because Gen X is like the Kurt Cobain era, which is just before
Gen
us.
Gen Alpha,
yeah.
Sucks to be her.
Gen Beta, I can't remember when that is going to be. I can never tell whether it's Beta or Beta. What do you say?
I think it's Beta.
Beta.
If you're from the UK.
Okay.
And just like data, data.
Data.
Data, data. But I don't know. I'm so like saturated in American culture, like in terms of like a lot of the stuff I've listened to over the years. I think Z sounds better than Z, so I tend to say Z in the alphabet.
Well, I guess you've got the excuse that you're Scottish, so you don't have to abide by like the Queen's English. You can just be like, no, fuck that. Come over the wall and tell me how to say Z or Z. One thing I don't like though is, and that's purely because it just doesn't make sense, is that when English people start adopting saying like, today is June 13th. No, it isn't. Mm-hmm. It's 13th of June.
13th. That one doesn't even make sense. Like June 13th doesn't make sense.
No.
Like it goes small to big.
Yeah, exactly.
13th of June.
But then don't
they? Month year.
Don't they also say the time weird as well?
Do they? What do they say?
They say it's like a 12 after 7 or something.
Do they? I wouldn't even know what that means. Is that 12 minutes after 7?
I think so, yeah. I don't think they say like 20 to 9. Maybe they do. Americans, tell us how you tell time. If there are any of you out there. And don't hate us for hating the way you speak.
Yeah, we're about to make them go turn off and unsubscribe.
We've done that many times in the past.
Always gives me a giggle. And it makes sense, I guess, but it gives me a giggle how literal a lot of their descriptors are. So like a pavement is a sidewalk. And they've got a name for like the Pelican Crossing's got a funny name as well. I can't remember what that is. And like it says walk and don't walk.
Crosswalk?
Is it a crosswalk? Yeah, like just literal. And they call, my favourite one is roundabouts or turning circles.
Well, they don't have any, so I guess they don't know what to call them. They just
which is really, like, turning circles are a very good way of traffic management.
They are.
Yeah. But as we discovered, I don't know how to do traffic management because I tried to play City Skylines and I cannot figure it out.
I did see you mentioning that somewhere.
It spoils the fun of me playing that game.
You said it's a really good game. In your, what's it called again? Substack,
yeah.
Yeah, you said it in that, which again, if anyone... Go on, tell them where to get that, because people listening, if you want games news in your emails, instead of having to do work during the day,
yeah,
this is what you want, because it's very, very useful.
I've started doing a weekly news roundup on a Friday of all the news stories that are either interesting or have grabbed my attention in some way. So if you head over to supersmiley.substack.com.
Yep, it'll be in the podcast description again.
Yes. So, yeah. Give that a subscribe because I'm enjoying doing it, so give me a reason to keep going, please. That'd be nice. Is it time to dive in? I don't even think we've told people. We've talked sort of around the Boomer Shooter subject, but I guess they'll have read it in the podcast description. But this week we've been playing Bolt Gun.
Yeah, we have. Warhammer 40K,
and I'm interested to sort of get some insight into you, in terms of... In fact, let's start with it. What's your sort of experience of Warhammer up to this point?
It is as minimal can possibly get.
Indeed,
I've never played it. I've never learned anything about it. All I've ever seen is that there are video games that exist that you seem to like. Even my dad doesn't play Warhammer in his you know, retirement age of tabletop gaming. None of his mates are Warhammer guys there.
Surprised by that, because it's the biggest one. I mean, I think Games Workshop have got a bigger turnover than some small countries. Like, it's a massive company. Yeah, they're absolutely ginormous. Yeah, I think during the pandemic, I think they made a massive expansion because people were like, oh yeah, I used to paint little models when I was a kid. I'll just do that for a bit. And then they were expecting some sort of like wind back after people went back to normal, but it hasn't happened and it's just kept going. They've just released up, so every so often, every time they release an update to their rules of their main game, where I think they're on 10th edition has just come out in the last couple of weeks, they release a box set, which is like a box, it's got the rules in it, it's got like a board, some terrain, and it's got two similarly strengthened, like similar points or power rated armies that can fight against each other, and that sold out in some like 2 seconds after it when it launched. It is unreal at the moment how big that IP is.
So can you explain to me, Warhammer is different to 40K, because is that all they have, like Warhammer is like traditional fantasy, is it, or am I making that up? Does that not
so
really
games work? You know, you're kind of right, kind of not. So, Games Workshop is the company that owns everything, and then they used to have Warhammer Fantasy, but that got replaced by something called Age of Sigmar, which is like their fantasy arm of Warhammer. So that's like swords, shields, bows and arrows, and stuff like that, and monsters, and things like that. Yeah. And then they have Warhammer 40,000, which is set 40,000 years in the future. Which is the one from the game that we played, and that's all like that's their sci-fi version. And then they also own the Lord of the Rings tabletop game as well, which they do.
Oh right, okay.
But yeah, that's the difference. It's basically they've got a fantasy side and they've got a science fiction side, and basically people pick whether they like science fiction or fantasy better. And the rules are quite different as well, actually. I think 40K is by far their biggest one of those games. And you see a lot of if there's going to be big changes to the rule set, you often see it in Age of Sigmar first, from what I've seen, because then if it's successful, they'll then slowly roll it into 40K.
I see, yeah. Then they'll bring it to the big table.
It's story-wise, it's absolutely impenetrable, I find, the story, because it is so big and so massive, the lore. But I think as a sort of like, so you're an ultramarine in boat gun,
yes,
which is like the Emperor's favorite chapter of Space Marines. There's lots and lots of different chapters, but basically, if you think of the Emperor like Jesus, he sort of sits in this room and he's all powerful and all seeing. He can't move. He's in this just like, his body's there. It's not rotten, but he doesn't seem to be present in his body, and he can sort of move around and watch people. So if you think of him like a god, essentially, yeah. And then each like leader of all the different Warhammer factions that you get have got their own sort of chapter leaders and stuff. But the Ultramarines are like the classic one. They're by far the most popular, even though I think if you were to speak to a lot of Warhammer 40k fans, people would hate them. But it's basically like the default Space Marine starter army. Looking at their sort of lore, they're very like almost Latin in their makeup. So like all their names and stuff are quite Latin looking. And yeah, they're essentially, when you look at a Space Marine, think of them as like an evil warrior monk. But they're neither evil nor good. They're just, they are.
Yeah, I was going to say, they definitely seem religious.
Was it? They're like religious zealots. So like, yes. there's a Space Marine army, and I'm forgetting what they're called. But like, they're essentially on the good guy's side, but they are tasked with. So there's like armies that will infest planets and stuff like that. And if this army gets a whiff of this sort of infestation, they'll just go and wipe out the planet, whether there's humans on it, whatever, they'll just wipe it clean off. So like, that's what I mean by they're kind of on the good guy's side, but you don't want to cross one. They are, in terms of size wise, I'm trying to think of like random info I can give you about Space Marines. Space Marines are about four times the size of a normal human. They've got multiple internal organs, so that like they've got like multiple hearts, so that if one gets shot, they can carry on. Yeah, and they're just like super strong. I think they can run. I was watching a thing the other day about them. They can run up to about 60 miles an hour. They're like beasts.
I guess that's why the controller vibrates with every single step you take when you play this game.
Yeah. Yeah, they're absolute weapons. If you stood next to a Space Marines, you would be coming up to his waist, for example. Like, they're really big, massive beasts. But anyway, like I was saying, I think I said it earlier on, I hate the term, but it's actually quite a succinct way to get the genre across of these games. Annoyingly, I hate how accurate it is, and kind of as soon as you say boomer shooter, people know exactly what kind of game you're talking about. But essentially, anyway, Bolt Gun is a boomer shooter. It's running on the Unreal Engine. It's developed by a company called Auroch Digital, known for a bunch of games I have never heard of. Alex, have you ever heard of Auroch Digital?
No, not at all. I'm surprised they got such a big license.
I'm surprised as well. They made Warhammer 40k Bolt Gun in 2023, which is what we're obviously talking about. And before that, they made a game for PS4, PS5, Xbox One called Brewmaster, which I've never heard of. It's a beer brewing simulator. Before that, they made a game called Mars Horizon. A game called Last Days of Old Earth, and then they seem to have made a bunch of mobile games. They're based in Bristol. And it was made by 61 employees, which is, I don't know, it's quite small by today's standards, right?
Well, I was thinking for this type of game, it seems like a lot when you consider Doom was made by like five blokes in a log cabin or whatever it was. Oh,
yeah, okay, that's a good point. That is a hellish good point. And it's not exactly like, I don't know, like if you've got an artist, I can't imagine it's, I don't know, is a boomer shooter a hard game to make, do you think? That's a good question.
It's probably a hard game to get the the tone and the delivery right, but I wouldn't say from a technical standpoint, maybe not. What's this made in? Unreal 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's a good point.
This seems like the kind of thing that a bloke could just do by himself if he really cared. I bet that we played, what was it, Proteus earlier, sort of independently, because we're planning to have a go on that co-op. But that seems like it was very, I mean, that's Humble Games, so that's Humble Bundle people making it. So that's got to be a pretty small team.
I've been trying to remember the game as you were talking there, because it's like me trying to stumble my way through a video game I can't remember the name of. It's going to annoy people, but there was a game that came out a number of years ago. I remember watching it on Total Biscuit, actually. It's basically like a boomer shooter, but it's like a roguelike, and you start at the bottom, and you start off, and as you go through the levels, it's, tower. Gun tower?
Oh, it's not ringing a bell.
Essentially, so there'd be people at home listening and absolutely shouting at me, but basically it was a boomer shooter, and it was maybe like one or two guys, this game, and you start off at the bottom of this tower, and you go through it, and it's, you die and you've got to restart, essentially. And as you go through, you pick up different weapons that have got different stats, abilities, and obviously you can get, like, it's the classic roguelike thing where you get the good run and getting the good weapons, and you get all the way to the top and kill all the bosses and complete the game. But yeah, that was made by like one or two people.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not hard, maybe it's a talent to get these games, the sort of, you're, like you're saying before, like the tone nailed. Because I think that's one thing that I noticed about, well, Doom, it's the ultimate Doom boomer shooter, the 2016 Doom.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They nailed the feel of that. And I think that game would have been fantastic no matter how it looked. Like, they could have overlaid these sort of sprite pixely graphics over the top of it, and I think it still probably would have been a good game.
Yeah.
Certainly enhanced by the good graphics, but yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. My next question was going to be ask you about Warhammer, but it's essentially, have you ever even thought about, because you've been known to waste money on plastic shit, and you've been known to play a board game. Is it never crossed your radar of interest at any point?
Probably not. It doesn't necessarily carry with it the greatest reputation.
No, I would agree with that.
Coolness. Although I would assume that it probably is actually quite a cool universe if you actually read into it.
It can be and it can't be. I think the thing I was touching on it before, but the thing I find like deeply frustrating about the Warhammer universe is because it's so vast and it has been going on for so long. I think it's like 40 years old now. And that if you wanted to know all about it, get lost. You're never going to do it. You've basically got to pick one thing. So like there was the Space Wolves is one, for example, which is like a Space Marine chapter that are like Vikings, but Space Marines. So then someone says, right, Space Wolves are my army. And then they can sort of fall down a hole learning about Space Wolves. That's doable. But then learning about all the different armies you can get is impossible. And it's impossible, and I think for me personally, I think what stops me from ultimately getting into it is that because it's a board game that essentially has to be balanced for play, you can't have any faction being much better than the other. So essentially you've got a whole universe that has been at war for all this time fighting each other, and it's essentially a stalemate because you can't have one team beat the other, because then people won't want to buy the plastic models of the team that lost. So they essentially butt heads against one another, and I find that quite dull after a while.
I can understand that.
The idea of the world is really cool. There's like the bits that I've often found quite interesting about the lore in the world is like there's these things called hives, underhives, and it's essentially what it is. It's like a planet-sized city. And then you can make stories within the city, and you basically just ignore everything else that's going on around you. You ignore the space marines, you ignore the outside battle, and it's just this smaller story about gangs in this like dystopian universe, and that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
But it's just the whole overarching thing I find quite off-putting.
But yeah, like, I don't actually even know how Warhammer plays as a board game. Is it dice rolls and stuff like that?
Yeah. Basically. I've got a rough idea of how Warhammer plays. I play like a sort of mini version of Warhammer called Kill Team. And it, the idea of that is that there's like a game of Warhammer might have 30 Space Marine models on a board that is like 6x4 feet.
Yeah.
Whereas the games I play are like 2x2 or something like that. Right, and it's got okay. I've got my kill team sitting over there, which is 5 models. And the idea behind this is it's a quicker paced game. Like me and my friend can get through a game in like half an hour to 45 minutes. And it's much smaller scale, being the idea being that you're controlling an elite group behind enemy lines rather than a big battle going on.
Yeah.
And I find that a bit more palatable and a bit more easy to absorb. But yes, essentially it's a dice roll. So if it's your turn, for example, you can move your model probably up to about 6 inches, and then you can decide if you want to run.
Are you literally measuring these as well?
Yeah, you've got a measuring tape and dice on your table, and then like say if I'm shooting a gun at you, it'll have a points value, so it'll be like 4 dice, and you roll 4 dice, and it's 3s to hit. And then if you hit on 3s, you then roll to wound. So then say you roll your 4 dice, and 2 of them are above 3 and above. You then take those 2 and roll them again, and it's maybe 3+ to hit as well. So anything once you roll again, if it's 3+, so you hit and then you wound. So then you basically have to get 3+ twice with those dice, and then you sort of match your wounds, and each character will have a certain amount of wounds they can take before they die. And you just play like that, and there's like 5 rounds, and by the end of the round, you'll have like objectives and stuff like that. So it'll be either kill people, or it'll be collect data, intelligence, or it'll be destroy something. You can like pick stuff up and run away with it and things like that. So depends on the scenario. I even seen a scenario in which there was a bunch of dwarves in a vehicle, and they were basically trying to drive from one end of the map to the other while other people shot at them and tried to stop them. Stuff like that. So it's really essential.
Is it putting a narrative? It's putting a narrative to it. Is there like a little sort of scenario card, and then you've got it's like the Bloodborne game that always has like every card you pick up will tell you a little bit more story, and it'll have some dialogue and things.
Yeah. So the story is meant to be emergent. Like my friend Tony and I are meant to make the story up. And at the end of each match, depending on how well each character performs, they get XP. So then they can come back with better equipment in the next game.
Okay.
And level up as they go on. It's sort of like a D&D meets.
I was going to say there's a D&D elements to it,
kind of, but there's no like play acting or anything like that. The story is whatever you decide between yourselves and go with that. But yes, I mean, it can be fun. I play it maybe twice a month, and that's more than enough for me. I don't really have any interest in going back. To be honest, it's a good way to hang out with a friend. I probably wouldn't see very much otherwise.
A couple of beers, chill out, not having to look at the screen for once.
That's exactly it. It's too expensive, and if I'm going to waste money on things, I'd much rather waste money on video games. But
yeah,
it is what it is. Anyway, let's get the plot out of the way.
Okay.
Because I got to the end of the plot of this game and couldn't have told you a single thing about it, really.
No,
so,
I don't think I remember reading any words that I took in. they were there.
It's not important, so let's just get through it, because I think it would be remiss to not talk about it. We can have a wee chat about it, and then we'll move on to the development and the gameplay and stuff like that.
Cool.
So this takes place on a Forge world called Graia, several years after the events of Warhammer 40k Space Marine, which is
the game.
Yep,
that's correct. It's getting a sequel this year, isn't it?
Sequel, yeah. And well, this year starting next. It looks quite good, actually.
It actually looks badass.
Yeah. The player takes the role of a space marine called Malom Kado. He is a Sterngard veteran space marine of the Ultramarines chapter, sent by the Inquisition to this planet Graia on a mission of great importance. Since the Orc and Chaos invasions from years before, the Inquisition has kept Graia, I can't say that word, so I'm going to get it wrong every time, closely watched for further threats. Inquisitor, this is where it gets difficult. Inquisitor is a type of he's a member of the Imperium, which is what a space marine is part of. This is where it gets really impenetrable and so annoying. Like he's essentially like a special policeman.
Okay,
that's the best. Let's think of it as that. The Inquisition has kept closely watched for further threats. Inquisitor Siebel of the Ordo Malis reveals that rogue tech priests of Graia have experimented with the remains of the late Inquisitor Drogon's power source, which I've got absolutely no idea what that even means. And the experiments have resulted in the opening of a warp. Now, the warps are these big things that tend to open up in the world, and yeah, I don't know what they are, if I'm honest. I'm not even gonna
Is that where the enemies are all coming from, is it?
Yeah, enemies can come out the warp.
They just keep appearing on screen, don't they? They just seem to like teleport in.
Exactly, yes. And they've allowed the forces of Chaos to once again invade the Forge World. Chaos is basically notation for bad guys.
So basically they've opened a portal to hell, like in Doom.
Yeah, that works. Yeah, that works to me. Malum Kado and his squad has been tasked with retrieving the power source and aid the Servo Skull, which is that thing that follows you about.
Making jokes.
Making jokes, yeah. When the Ultramarines make planetfall, their drop pod is severely damaged during the descent and crash land on the planet's surface, leaving only Madam K.O. as the sole survivor. I've got more here for the story, but that's essentially what it is. You are off to investigate chaos on a planet. You crash land on the planet, you're the only survivor, and it's up to you to basically go and take all that shit down and mess and deal with chaos on your own.
And deal with it he does.
I was going to say it's enough to propel the story forward, but it's not. Like that is. I know I've read it out, and I know I play this game, but for the most part, that is gobbledygook to me. That makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't make me particularly want to play the game. But what does make me want to play the game is the actual gameplay. What's your feeling of the game? Because we were talking about this over the weekend, and yeah. I was saying how hard I found the sort of second third of the game, maybe like towards the end of chapter two, and then like the first three quarters of chapter three were quite tough. I don't know if I eventually got better at it or got into a groove or it just sort of got over itself, but I found it really, really hard. And you said it was quite, I don't know if I'm picking this up wrong, but you said it played quite differently from a lot of other boomer shooters, or it was sort of different in structure. Is that fair?
I played a bit of Ion Fury around this, and that felt a lot sort of looser, way faster, and the level design in that was really odd. It's very that game's very vertical. It's almost they kind of build levels that like basically like on a slope, and they sort of slope upwards. You got you're just climbing sort of stairs along the side of cities where just big gaps in the middle. I don't know. I don't really know why there's even less of a story in that game. This game felt tighter. It felt a lot more refined. There was actually quite a lot of modern shooter feel to this, other than the lack of like aiming down sights or whatever. But I could really feel this more trying to ape something like Doom 2016 than the original Doom in how it actually feels to play. Maybe that's because there was an auto-aim on it that maybe made it feel a little bit more snappy. And in terms of how it plays, there's almost nothing to fault about it. It's really, really solid. It's really like relentless, but fun for the most part.
One thing I found about it that as the game went on, I felt like the way in which it ratcheted, and again, this is why I'm interested in sort of your history of the boomer shooter and how it compares to the other ones, because I felt it's how it approached sort of difficulty scaling was to either throw more enemies at you, which is kind of what I was expecting, or like the bosses, for example, just were utter bullet sponges.
And they really were.
If I was to sort of say like my personal weak points of the game, it was towards these boss fights, because I felt like they were just relentless in a way that like some of them were, I found really hard, but a lot of them I felt relentlessly just, what's the word? It just monotonous isn't the right word. It just kept going, and it was just like, we're just going to bullet sponge you so that you just got to... relentless is probably the right word I'm trying to think of.
There's just no tangible tactic to fighting the bosses other than find the gun that they're weak against and then just avoid the mobs for ages and ages. Like, the final boss having three forms is a fucking joke.
Yeah.
Where you're in an arena where you can fall in lava, you're constantly just having to run away from like the tiniest little enemies that are like knee height to you that you can almost forget are there half the time. I felt like a lot of the time in the boss arenas, especially if I was running around trying to avoid getting or trying to even find the boss, by the time I actually got there to take some shots at him, I'll have about 20 to 30 of those little green dickheads like nibbling at my ankles that I'd have to turn around and deal damage to them. That I just, you could so seldom actually focus on attacking the boss because everything was just like piling enemy after enemy. And he, whatever boss you're fighting, is going to, as you say, is going to not only be a bullet sponge, but after you've given them a certain amount of damage, they're probably going to teleport somewhere else. So then you have to go find them again in amongst the mobs and mobs of enemies. So I'm with you there. The difficulty spikes in this game did seem unbalanced. They did seem sporadic in a bad way. And because like you'd start, you know, you'd do a really difficult boss fight at the end of World 2 or whatever, Chapter 2. And you'd start Chapter 3 and it would kind of be fine again for a bit. It takes all your fucking weapons away for some reason. I do not understand. Especially considering the story is supposed to just be very, very straightforward, linear. Oh, I've gone on the massive elevator. Now it's Chapter 3, but somehow I dropped all my guns off the side of the elevator on the way up. They would like lower it down again. You start almost every single level would start with you'd have like the cultists, and then you'd move up into like the pink horrors and the blue guys. Yep. And then all of a sudden it would just be one of the purge moments where it would just throw like 100 enemies at you in an arena, which again is very Doom 2016, Doom Eternal. There's the Doom Eternal thing with the weapons, you know, where you had to like get specific weapons that enemies were weak to. I feel like this game has copied that as well to add that in with the little skull icon on your top of your screen for the health bar. So, yeah, that mixed in with the what seems to be like obligatory confusing level design that you have to have inherent to Boomer Shooters.
Yeah. I was consistently getting lost.
Yeah, without a map. I mean, come on, boys. Even that Proteus game we've just played has a map.
It's got a map. It does.
Even Doom has a map. Like taking a map out of it. Sometimes, like I would get lost in levels where the way to get out of an arena that I was stuck in was like basically a sort of back door in the corner of the room that's behind a wall, so you can't even see that it's a door. When you mix that in, where you're either getting completely pelted by, like I say, 100 enemies that just keep spawning in and getting harder and harder, probably a big bullet sponge somewhere in there as well. You're scrambling around for health, sprinting away from everything, and they're still following you to pick up all these tiny little health pickups. Then you're going straight into, well, now I'm totally lost, and you're walking around for 10 minutes not knowing where to go before you get completely gang raped again. Like, after a while, that the shine of that wears off, and the, you know, the retro feel kind of makes you think, well, maybe games have come on somewhat since then. I'm here for the guns. I'm here for the violence. I'm here for the fast pace and the skill based gameplay. But I'm not here for these old sensibilities of I can't find the fucking yellow key, and when I do find it, it's 10 minutes before I realize where the door was because there's no map. And the enemies are going to respawn on my way back. That's when the game became less fun and a bit more of a slog than I'd expected it would. Even though it's a short game as well. It's a slog and it's 6 hours long. Something's gone wrong there.
That's the thing, is I felt like it was almost old school in its design to a fault.
Yes.
In that, yeah, you're right. Like when this game is up and running and fully load, like in the swing of things, it's absolutely fantastic. Like,
yeah,
you're right, the fast pace and the movement is really fun, and actually, like, I kind of swung between being frustrated by it and actually quite liking it. So I eventually got quite annoyed by that you were talking about having to avoid the mobs towards the end of the game. There's like parts within in the middle to the beginning of the back half where I end up quite liking it because it's a change of pace. I think when you're going through the levels, you've got to kill everything you see for the most part. Or at least I was.
Just trying to get 100%, right? So
yeah, and then when you enter the bit with the boss, a lot of the time the boss was spawning the mobs, so there was really no point in killing the enemies. So you were trying to stay away from them, who were also trying to damage. It was just like a dodging exercise.
Yeah,
while also trying to do damage to the enemies. But I found that like in that respect, like sometimes the pacing would be really, really off because you'd be. When, like I'm saying, when it's clicking along, it is really purring along and it's great. But then, like, you're like, oh no, my health is low.
Mm.
So then you'd have to go back and look for health And I just thought, well, this is not fun particularly. You're taking me away from the fun to then retrace my steps to a level that I probably got lost in anyway. Yeah. And it was probably hanging around the door because I was like, if I run away from this door, I'm not going to be able to find my way back.
Well, especially if there's health behind you. Like, I'm going to stand next to this health pack until I need it, and then I'll go and try and find another one and fight from there.
The one that jumps out to me is Furnace of Damnation. It's the second last level where you're sort of making your way slowly upwards, up a long bit, and then there's a bit at the end where you've got to do some platforming. And I was walking around, honestly, in this small circular area for about 15 minutes, thinking, I don't know where I've got to go. All the enemies are dead. I am totally lost. Mm. Turns out the smudgy, pixelated graphics had just made my eyes miss a blatant hole in the wall that I could have walked up. And I did that so many times.
Same.
So
is that the one where it's like you're firing yourself to those little square encampments full of those? What are those big bastards called? The ones are like the aspiring champion and the other ones. I can't remember. Terminators and something else.
Terminators, aspiring champion, and then there's like the champion, whatever he's called, but they've got their weird name for it.
Yeah. I actually didn't realize that apparently when the aspiring champion, when you've killed them, you know, obviously then afterwards they usually spawn their like chosen champion or whatever.
Yeah.
If you eviscerate the corpse of the aspiring champion before he has a chance to spawn, then it doesn't actually spawn. You can't.
Oh,
stop
right.
It.
Okay. That makes sense. Because I'd found out. I had figured out that if I sort of killed him with explosions, I didn't get another one. I hadn't worked out what was causing that. I just worked out that it was something that seemed to work.
Yeah.
But you're right, there's set pieces that are good. There's one that I'm trying to think of. What did you think of that level where you're on a lift and you've
got... I thought that was great. That's what I was thinking of when I said that.
That's the one that jumps out to me. And like I like how they've got basically the things you're trying to get to on the lift that you're on.
Yeah.
And you basically got to leave the lift, go and get your stuff and come back and then just fight these endless hordes of enemies. And it's big and it uses verticality in a way that I think a lot of the game doesn't use.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you've got like a not quite, but it's like almost like a de facto grappling hook with your left trigger, because you can slow down the game to a pause, and then he will launch himself towards whatever you're going to use your left trigger chainsaw on. And I wish I'd used that more, because you could use that to get higher. If there's enemies above you, you could aim at them and he would fly towards it. So I was going to say exactly what you just said about that whole whatever the lift level is where when you actually get into the fights on the lift itself has about four or five levels. There's some like platforming you can do. You can jump right down to the bottom, which is usually where the health stuff was. I just thought that was a really excellently paced level, full of really clever, like sort of, like I said, vertical design to allow for a really interesting way to fight all the stuff. And then a little bit of exploration as well.
The level's literally called Grand Elevator. There's a bit at the beginning. There's a bit at the beginning of the game where you've got to drop through a hole and you land on top of an enemy and completely splat him.
Yeah.
I never did that again. I thought, I was like, oh, that's a cool part of the game. I was hoping to be able to use your sort of size and bulk. Because like I say, you're like, you're like this massive thing. I wish they'd done a bit more of that, but it's one thing that they started with and I just never had to engage with that again.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I wonder if that was just like scripted rather than an actual ability that he has. I don't know. Unless it was using the left trigger to do that.
Yeah, well, there was often parts of the game where I'd land very, very close to someone, if not on them, and they didn't react at all. So yeah, I was a bit disappointed by that, because I was expecting to be able to like go up high and jump off onto things and in amongst people. That would have been really good fun. What did you think of the poison enemies?
Oh, fucking hell! Yeah, they were worst.
They were hard, and the giant frog thing. The giant
plague toads, is it?
Yeah. Plague toads, yeah. So these guys are, if anyone's interested, these are from the Nurgle. So basically, a lot of the chaos demons are made up of different things that is bad in humanity. So the Nurgle one is the sort of demon of rotten decay. Yeah, so that's why they're all poisoned, and that's why they all look green and like these rotten beasts. And if you see the models and stuff, they'll have like their intestines coming out their stomach and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay.
So he's in the unclean one. He was another one. He was the first boss that gave me a bit of toughness. I cheesed the life out of him. I think I told you that via text.
You did,
there's a bit you could get up on top. I don't think you were meant to get there, but I managed to like climb up on top, and essentially his little mobs would just run off the side of the map and they couldn't get to you. And then I just sat and like used up all my bullets shooting them in a corner. I assume you just did it in the proper way, did you?
Oh, I just ran around in circles over and over and over again. And this is the thing that I was talking about, where by the time I'd actually get to find him, I'd turn around and there'd be like 30 of his little blokes after me, and I'd have to deal with them. Otherwise, they're just going to like chip away at my health 30 at a time. And it was just never, yeah. So I just felt like I could never actually get to fight him. I was always just running around trying to find him and then having to deal with his mob as soon as I did. Very frustrating.
I kind of touched on it before, but how would this sort of, I want to drill into this a bit more because I'm really fascinated by it, especially after going away and playing a bit of Proteus today. How does this rank for you in comparison to like the bigger pantheon of boomer shooters? Because I was looking through your Steam library and you've got a good few boomer shooters on there. I don't know how many you've played, but there's
not
a few
enough
on there, and I didn't buy them, so they must be yours.
Yeah. I've got Dusk on there, I'm pretty sure.
Dusk,
which is supposed to be more like Quake. That looks like it could be quite a lot of fun.
Let me run through a couple of these and you can tell me which one you've played. Let me open my Steam library quickly for you. So we've got Blood, Fresh Supply. I remember we spoke about that a little bit before.
Yeah, and Blood is actually, a Fresh Supply is actually like a remaster of the original Blood, which I think is early 2000s game. So that one really did feel its age, and people are probably going to switch off if they're actually PC boomer shooter fans right now, because I need controllers. I can't do mouse and keyboard. I just don't have the space for it for a start. I sit on my sofa. I can't play with a mouse and a keyboard. So the controller support for that I found really finicky and really difficult to actually get to a point where the sensitivity wasn't either zero, aka it doesn't turn round, or it turns around with the tiniest little touch. That game is incredibly hard. It's very cool though. Dynamite, the dynamite in it is one of my favorite things about that game. He's got sticks of dynamite that he lights and just chucks at stuff.
I think
it's got like a Wild West kind of
that's right. This is the one I want to play, because this has got a train level in it, isn't it?
Yeah.
When I was Googling the best train levels in video games about a year ago, that was one of the ones that kept coming up.
Yeah.
So that's one it's
probably the one I would go back to again first to try and figure it out. But again, similar sort of thing. Big open levels, easy to get lost, needing to find keys. I mean, they're all going to have that.
You've got Dusk on here, which looks quite interesting as well.
Yeah, Dusk is meant to be is one of the big boys. There's that, and there's Ultra Kill, which I don't think I've bought yet, but is on my Steam wish list. Those two are supposed to be like the boomer shooters that everybody talks about.
What about Hexen? Have you played that?
Hexen's wicked, yeah. That is from right about the same time as original Doom. You're probably talking a couple of years later. I've got it on the N64, which is supposed to be a terrible version of it. Because the PC, I remember when I was going back and doing those N64 magazine looks for Goomba Stomp, a lot of the reviews for Hexen on N64 were pretty scathing, sort of saying like Hexen is a great game, but on the N64 it's a terrible game. That is a game I would really like them to remaster, or at least even like bring out another one of. That would be quite cool. Fucking Phil Spencer had a Hexen shirt on in the Xbox show.
He did. I noticed that, yeah.
He got me all excited for that. I thought, wow, this is a turn up for the books. Just thinking about these games right now, and here we go.
He knows what he's doing, though. He's surely not wearing that T-shirt for nothing.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought he's hinting at something. Maybe we'll find it in the PC show, but that wasn't there either. But yeah, Hexen is basically like fantasy Doom, so it's like magic and swords and
cool
that kind of thing. So I think you'd really enjoy that. Again, it's very very old. It's late 90s, so that's like, does that count as a boomer shooter? I guess it does, right?
Probably.
Is it boomer shooters and modern boomer shooters? Is that what it is, or is it just games that are made now are boomer shooter? Who knows?
I think I don't know how it works,
but yeah, Hexen's cool.
It's a cool, this is another, I think this is probably becoming quite a common thing for me to say on podcasts, but it's a cool genre that I haven't played enough of, and I probably need to play more of. Like, I've played the more recent Doom games. I mean, like, I think even probably Wolfenstein, the modern one, certainly would probably count in this sort of category of shooters. It's a frantic, fast-paced, runabout and avoid things shooter. More so than the original Wolfenstein, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Then there's, yeah, the Doom games. I've played Doom 64, Doom 1 and 2, a bit of Proteus. I've played this game. So I guess I have played a few of them.
Yeah.
It's Tower of Guns. That's the game. It's just coming to my head. That was the game, okay, I was talking about earlier. It'll be on your... I think you've probably got that on PlayStation. If you've had a play, if you had PS Plus for any length of time, you'll have it on your PlayStation.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that's a fun game.
I think the thing is that, like, kind of like with this game, and I have felt it with most of the games like this that I have tried, is that the novelty does just wear off a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they are very repetitive. They are, like, basically reusing the same sort of enemies. It's kind of just different maps of the same thing over and over again. You don't get massive set pieces. You don't get cutscenes. You don't get story progression. You don't get missions. It's just kill everything. And so, yeah, maybe you just have to be in, like, the mood for it for longer than, like, a nice sort of throwback. Yeah. That's the struggle, I think, with making, like, a modern boomer shooter, is to be like, right, well, the previous ones are usually fun for like an hour, and then after a while you're just like, okay, well, that's enough now. I've just been like, my eyes are bleeding because I've just been shooting the shit out of everything, and I've done nothing else but hold down a trigger and run around and get lost. So I think trying to keep that engaging for a long amount of time must be very difficult, which is why so many of the games come out and are only a few hours long, including this. And obviously it's even more so with the old ones, which is why I kind of pick them up and go, hey, yeah, brilliant. And then an hour later, I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to pick that up again.
I think that's sort of my key takeaway from it, because I went on an arc with this game. Like, I started off playing, I was like, okay, this is interesting, it's something different, quite enjoying myself. And then I got into a bit of a groove with it, and I was like, I love this. This is so much fun. When it's, like I say, when everything clicks, it is amazing. And then by the end of it, I was like, this is a slog. Like, I'm exhausted playing this. Yeah. And it was just like, it was such an odd, I don't know, what do you call it, like, circle I went through. Like, just like, not sure, loved it, absolutely done with it. And like you're saying, like, I think you were spot on when you said the game was a bit of a slog and it's only like 5 hours long. That was something wrong there, that it shouldn't be a slog. So which kind of makes me think that, like, and the one I'm going to keep coming back to is because it's visually it doesn't look the same, but in essence it's kind of the same game as Doom 2016. And what that did is it brought the boomer shooter format, but then also brought things with it. So, like, we were talking about having to backtrack and replenish your health, whereas Doom 2016 did the whole, if you're starting to lose health, if you become super aggressive and start melee killing enemies, it will start replenishing your health. And that was just enough of a tweak on the format to make it interesting and keep you going. And it meant you had to just keep...
You're always, like, fighting enemies is the way that everything in that game works. As you say, it's how you get ammo, it's how you get health, it's how you progress with the levels. And then there'll be maybe a bit of backtracking or exploration when you want to find, like, the secrets. Whereas in this one, getting the keys and then having to run all the way back through a level where you just don't remember where the door was and there's no way for you to check, it's just not good game design. It's not valuing the time of the player, which is something that you and I find really key to our enjoyment of games.
Which is, it kind of, like, leaves me with sort of mixed feelings on this, because, like you're saying, like, it's not good game design, but if they were to say to me it's designed to be like an old school shooter, well, it is.
Yeah, you've done it.
It really is. They've nailed it. Does that make a fun game necessarily? I mean, yes, I know, I think, is probably my takeaway from it. I had a great time with this game, but I also had some times where I was just like, oh God.
I was dreading that purge stuff by the end. Like, every time I came into a big square room, I thought, oh God, I'm going to have to run around this room for ages scrabbling for health and stuff, because there's just going to be so many enemies. Like, I much preferred, like, when they got the level traversal right. Like, remember that level where it's got those massive cannons that just, like, enormous in the snow at the beginning?
Yeah.
Like, that was something cool to look at. That's like a cool visual spectacle. Because, again, if you're going to make a game with really scaled down graphics where it's all very, like, pixely and bitty, that's going to get boring to look at after a while as well, unless you do something imaginative with it. And they kind of stopped that, other than the lift towards the end. Like, they just really kind of stopped it. It was just like inside dungeony type levels when you get into the hell part of it. And then that's not helping carry me through the slog of the gameplay or getting lost, because everything looks the fucking same, at least in the earlier levels. You're actually, like, you're flying through this linear action romp, which is way more fun. Give me, like, a couple of enemies spawning in as I'm making my way through it. Absolutely fine. I'll lay waste to all of them, but when I'm having to just circle around a room and strafe shoot for like 10 minutes, then get lost in an endless maze of the same browns, that is where the game and all of these games fall short, unless you're going to really do something spectacular at the end of all of it, which this game rarely did. It was just a boss.
Yeah, totally. I could not agree more with you on that. And I actually felt like the sort of, like you're saying, the environments became less interesting as the game went on, because you started off in this big open area. They had massive set pieces. They had like interesting skyboxes.
Yeah.
And then you just go inside caves for like 3 hours. And these caves are narrow. They all look the same, trying to figure out your way. And then you move from a cave into an industrial building that is full of narrow corridors as well. And yeah, I almost felt like, I was going to say the game felt like it was back to front, but if it was back to front, I'm not sure I would have got past the opening couple hours.
Yeah, probably
not. This is dull. This is not interesting. Whereas by time it sort of ramped up, I was on the hook, so I had to keep going. Talking about things that were keeping you on the hook, how was your feeling on the weapons? I think largely I quite liked them. They were fun.
Yeah.
They felt weighty in a way that I really appreciated. That shooting the bolt gun felt like you were shooting this big, hefty piece of machinery.
Did I read somewhere that that's supposed to be like a mini rocket launcher bolted to a pistol or something?
There is something about it. The only information I could give you is remember the size of a space marine. So if the gun is going to look normal on him, think of the size of the gun that he's shooting.
I think that has to go down as one of the best like default weapons, like, or first guns I've ever had in the game.
Yeah.
Like, such a viable gun that they clearly want to make the focal point of the whole game, which is why you'll probably bring this up in a minute, like the upgrades or the ammo limited upgrades that you can get just for the bolt gun, where it fires different types of ammo. Really cool way to keep it relevant when the time you get your arsenal full of, like, I don't even know how many you have by that point. 10 guns, maybe? 8 or 10?
2, 4, 6, 8 guns, apparently.
Yeah. Obviously, they give you some of the basic tropes of it. You get, like, a proper AR. You get a shotgun. Really liked the shotgun as well, even though it seemed to be downward red on every single enemy.
Everything.
In the entire game.
Everything. You'd be shooting those little frog things that would be like down red, but they'd still explode in one shot. So I was like, I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah, really odd. The plasma gun was cool. Did a lot of damage to you, like splash damage that I frequently did to myself. But some of the later game ones they gave you, I really enjoyed. That one that was like a basically just an orange laser that just melted people was good. The grav gun.
The grav gun? There's Melta Gun, and then there's Vengeance Launcher as well. That was like probably the green laser beam thing.
Was the grav gun, the laser beam
was
thing.
It? Okay.
Yeah, the that one you just said, the launcher, was the one that was like above the bolt gun on the up on your D-pad, and that was like firing those like grenades.
Like,
I thought that was...
And then it
I kept
was like
forgetting
timed,
I had that.
Timed explosives or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, okay.
I quite like that because you could get quite a lot of distance on that, and it almost like it was almost like they were sticky grenades, or they were sticking into the enemy, and then exploding. I really liked that one that shot like rings of fire. What was that one on the right D-pad, on next to the shotgun?
Melta gun, probably.
Because that one also shot through surfaces as well, which I didn't realize till it showed it on a loading screen. That was a really cool gun, but hardly any ammo for it.
Yeah, my favourite gun was, well, the bolt gun, because it was so fun to shoot, and I loved it when you shot like a sort of regular enemy, because it would just eviscerate them, and I just really enjoyed mowing through people like that.
Good tray on the bullets for that as well, so you could actually see them sort of flying through the air.
The gun I would always look for in one of those purge areas was basically the heavy bolter. If I had like ammo for that, that thing would just melt through things. I just like love running Chaos Space Marines with that thing out, and because you just unload and then they'll just be gone, because like it would shoot. So if you're again, because you're in like this tight space, you'd be shooting down the corridor, and very often you wouldn't be able to see who you were shooting, and then you'd stop shooting, and there'd just be nothing left. You're like, oh well, that's dealt with.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Yeah, just like a corridor full of like viscera that you're left with.
Again, like the good thing about these guys, like the chainsword, the bolt gun, the shotgun, the plasma gun, the heavy bolter, the melta gun, grav cannon, and vengeance launcher. These are all guns that are in the game, which is a nice sort of nod. You spoke about being damaged by the plasma. plasma gun. That's a sort of, at least within my group of friends, it's an infamous gun that if you roll a one, it'll do damage to you. It'll sort of bounce back on you, which I thought was nice that they sort of tied that in some way into the game, which was quite... Definitely. I enjoyed it. We spoke briefly about the power-ups. Apparently, there are 7 power-ups in the game, Alex. I did not absorb that playing through the game whatsoever. So we'll run through a couple of them. We can talk about maybe the ones that are interesting. There's the Emperor's Visage. That's the one that looked a bit like a Caesar crown that you picked
up.
Oh,
yeah.
The effect of this one was visions... Well, this is the in-world effect. Visions of the Emperor bolster your contempt, receive a huge contempt boost.
We didn't know what contempt was for a while, did we?
No. But your contempt is set. Contempt must do some sort of damage then that we were missing out on here, because until contempt falls below 200, contempt maximum.
I think it's your armor. Because at one point he said, "My shield is my disgust," which I loved as a line. I think it's just your hatred for everything is how you shield yourself from there. Bollocks. I don't know.
Bollocks. Yeah. We get the Aura of Doom, which is like the fist holding the knuckle dusters.
Yeah.
This one, increase your damage and reduces incoming damage for 30 seconds.
Loved that. If you found that in the middle of a purge area, that was so good.
Really good. We've got the Assault Doctrine, which is, I don't know what that looks like. It's like wings with a chainsword. This powers up your chainsword to cut them into pieces. I never used a chainsword enough, so I probably did not
know that's what that was doing. Yeah.
Yeah, so I did not make good use of that one.
That's like the old Berserker thing in Doom, isn't it? Where he just gets his fists out and starts punching the shit out of everybody.
Talking about things I didn't use nearly enough, and I didn't even use it at all until you spoke about it, and then I probably didn't use it enough after that, was the LB button that does like a charge.
Yeah.
That was fun, but I didn't use it enough, and I didn't use it to great effect because my brain just wasn't in the flow of making it work. But
yeah,
you did.
But that was good for for those little dickheads running after you, the mob enemies. You hit LB, you can get rid of about 5 or 6 of them. He just smashes through all of them.
The munitions boon. This increases your maximum ammo until the end of a mission.
Oh, I thought it just gave you max ammo.
I thought it just maxed out your ammo, but nope, that's quite a good one. The machine spirit. This one powers up your weapons. Machine spirits can be unpredictable. Every weapon is affected differently. So let's have a look.
Is that the green thing?
Yes. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, so that's the thing where it piles up the weapon that you've got equipped at the time you pick it up. So if you're not paying attention, you might pick up one that's not.
So this GamerRant.com has a nice little... So it says, the upgrades afforded by Machine Spirit are undeniably beneficial, albeit tricky to identify and use effectively. Players need to understand how this pickup affects each weapon and under what circumstances particular armaments should receive enhancements. Doesn't actually say what it does. Oh, so here we go. It can be an improvement to the weapon's strength, or a quickened firing rate, or ricocheting bullets that bounce off surfaces. This relic turns even the humblest guns into weapons of mass destruction. So it seems to be like a random, it'll randomly upgrade something or add something to it. It's a cool little spanner in the works, potentially.
Even there, they've said that it's not always apparent what's actually going on. Yeah. So that's a bit of a shame that it doesn't kind of make it a little bit more obvious what you've actually unlocked when you pick it up.
Yeah. There's an infinite ammo one, which is obviously infinite ammo for 30 seconds, which is useful. Yeah. I often found that and then didn't get to use it because I couldn't find it anywhere to shoot.
Yeah, that's annoying as well. The 30-second timer things, if you find it once you've cleared out an area, that's really annoying. And then the opposite side of that is obviously they give you towards the end of the game especially, they give you these really cool guns that do crazy shit, and then you're often not having any ammo for it. Like I said, the melter gun probably could do about 30 bullets, which is takes up 5 at a time. You get 6 shots out of it. Yes, if you had too much of it, you would be OP, but I often found that I was either like not able to find any ammo for something or just constantly getting more and more ammo, and it kept saying ammo full, ammo full, ammo full, like in the little feed down in the corner. It didn't feel like the balance for that was quite right.
Yeah, I agree. And then this site's got the best powered up being the vortex grenade, which was good.
Yeah. Big if you wasted that on a normal enemy, then you'd be livid. I think I actually reloaded a save once when I pressed it by accident.
Did you?
Yeah. Because you could change grenades with B, but I kept forgetting. I must have pressed B by accident and threw that at like two cultists and thought, well, that's a waste, because that normally does a boss in one go, or at least does like a big, big chunk of their health. So yeah, I reloaded a save once when I did it by accident.
There are different types of gun upgrades that you can find. So for in weapon upgrades, so there's and different types of ammunition that the bolt gun can come with. So I wonder if that's this right. is what it is we're finding. So there's the Kraken bolts,
that's what
Dragonfire bolts.
Oh, Dragonfire, yeah.
So you also get Hellfire bolts, but the Dragon bolts are basically turns the bolt guns into incendiary rounds.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think there's a lot of variation here that you can get with the guns, which I quite enjoyed. I never felt that I was getting bored of the weapons at any point. I thought there was plenty to offer. And then even within the weapons themselves, there was lots of variations. So like, there was obviously the upgrades you could get and then these special upgrades. One thing that I was never clear about was at the end of each act, you just lost all your weapons.
Yeah, that
I couldn't
was
figure out why that was happening.
No, I didn't like that at all. There was no need for that. And there's no... Like I say, it doesn't fit into the fact that the story is supposed to be you making your way from one point to another and then suddenly just losing all your guns, even though you've just fought a boss. I didn't care for that at all. Like I say, I like where it was making you have stronger weapons against certain enemies to keep you cycling through the arsenal and not just like sticking to one gun, because I enjoyed having to use all of them and cycle through and remembering, like, I kept forgetting to use that grenade launcher thing. Loads, and then I found it really useful for bosses after a while. Again, even though it always said it was weak against them, it wasn't.
No. Yeah, I find that quite a lot. But yeah, I actually wondered at some point when I was playing this, is like, if I missed a story beat in each act, I'm playing as a different Space Marine, but that didn't seem to be true either. So
no.
Yeah, it was just really...
No, because it
really...
did seem to sort of follow on with the a very brief cutscene afterwards, didn't it? Where it told you the next mission, like, it would say, you've made your way into the inner sanctums now, it's time to go take out the sorcerer once and for all. So I remember thinking to myself, okay, definitely still the same guy, definitely still the same day. It's the very next thing that he does, but he's now got no guns. Bizarre.
Did you ever make good use of the Y button, Alex, that does a random taunt?
Yeah, quite a lot. Not to enemies, though, usually. Normally when I'd killed them all, I'd say something. But that's how I found when he said, my shield is my disgust. So what a weird thing, though.
It's a weird thing, but it was voiced by a guy called...
Yeah, he's been in some stuff, hasn't he? He's like an actual actor, isn't he?
He's an actual voice actor, yeah. There's a guy called Rahul Kohli.
Mm.
I was trying to work out, because I was listening to other people talk about this game, and apparently he's quite well known in the community, so he's a bit like a less famous Henry Cavill, and he's actually quite a notable Warhammer fan, as well as being... a voice actor. So let's have a look at kind of things he's been in. He's been in Holby City, Red versus Blue, the Harley Quinn TV show, Rocketeer, Midnight Club. He's not a massive... he's been in... He plays Faz Chutani in Gears 5. And he's also in Fortnite and Ghostbusters.
I hate that guy.
he's sort of a well-known guy within the community, which I thought was a nice touch to be able to add him to.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Just being Alex, do you want to have a stab at guessing the Metacritic score for this game?
Well, when I was looking at the Wikipedia page for a little bit of brief research before we did this recording, I noticed that it said something along the lines of it's received mixed to favourable reviews. So I was surprised, because obviously I leapt into it thinking, well, everyone loves this. You showed me that GameSpot review that absolutely like lauded over it, and I saw a lot of other people on YouTube saying they liked it. So I'm going to guess that it's 73?
Oh, he's nailed it right on the head.
How do I keep doing this?
It's an absolute Metacritic king. You've just got Metacritic plugged into your veins.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that feels about right for me, though, because it was a good game. I enjoyed my time with it. I do think it overstayed its welcome, because it just never varied itself up at some point. And it's like I said before, it's way to ratchet up difficulty and keep interest in the player was just to give you more of everything, more enemies, and increase their health as time went on. And I think games need to have a little bit more than that in 2023. But again, exactly. if they're looking to evoke the classic boomer shooter, they've made a classic boomer shooter. I just don't think they've moved the genre on in any way. But again, they don't have to. They're not trying to.
No one tries to in this. Yeah.
It just seems to know what it is and be quite happy to sit in its lane. And I think there's something for that. And I think if you're really into this type of game, this is one that you'll probably pick up and have a great time with. It's funny we've ended up playing it because, as we've spoken about, there's plenty other of these sort of shooters out there that we maybe would have had a better time with. But I don't know.
We may have to revisit this genre at some point in the next year or so.
I didn't have a bad time with it. I just didn't have an utterly mind-blowing time with it either.
Yeah. Yeah, it just really petered out. Like I started it immediately thinking, yes, this is fucking awesome. And then towards the end, just, oh God, not another game, not another level. Like, please let this be over soon. I can't do it. Which I think if you pace yourself better with it, maybe, you know, you just take it as like, I'm going to jump in and have a bit of a go on that for a while.
Yeah.
Rather than try and slog through the whole campaign like we did. Maybe there's something in that. But I do find I fall off these games a lot, as I said earlier. And I without this podcast, I probably would have fallen off this one as well once the going.
I think I would have stopped. Dreary. I would have got halfway through and fell off. I think if we hadn't been podcasting about this, would have been where I would have gone. I'll try to look through some little synopsis reviews to see what you think of them. So IGN said that they disliked the enemy AI. They said that it made certain encounters trivial for many people, especially challenge seekers. The brain dead AI is where the game will risk losing them.
I don't think the AI is supposed to be anything but that. Most of them are little tiny monsters that are just going to rush you and be gank squads, and then you've got guys just there to be fodder. It's supposed to be a pretty much relentless power trip. You're supposed to be eradicating all this evil, but I wouldn't. I don't know what they're expecting from the AI there. It's supposed to be like Doom AI, which is just they stand there and you shoot the shit out of them.
Yeah, I mean,
they overwhelm you after a while.
The only example I can think of is when those mobs were running off the map to try and get me, running to their death. But they couldn't have got me, so other than that, they could have just stood still. I can see what they're meaning. It's not complex. It's not like The Last of Us AI, but it doesn't need to be, and it wasn't trying to be. So yeah.
It's almost most of the time they're sort of just placed in areas for you to run through and smoothly just mop up. As you go along, they're just supposed to be almost a game of whack-a-mole where they're just there as set pieces to your gunfire. But there are elements. I remember there would be times where I would walk around a corner and some of those little dudes would just be walking into a wall, facing away from me and just thinking, "What the fuck has happened here? Something has broken you, pal." But it's not something I would label as a negative against the game because I don't expect it to be any better than that, and I don't know if I would want to, because they're just supposed to rush you. Everyone's supposed to find where you are and come at you, and that's why you're supposed to be keeping on your toes. That's the point of it, I think.
I'm not overly thinking about having some sort of tactical battle with these enemy AI. They're just not that smart. You're right.
It's not
a
cover shooter,
they seem to be built to rush me, and that's literally it. There's no...
yeah.
Or stand still from a distance and shoot me on a platform that they can't move on anyway.
Yeah.
Polygon said that the visuals captured the essence of 40K, which I probably agree with that.
Yeah.
The Abyss of Chaos looks downright disturbing, and even captured an old school, captured it through an old school lens, which is, it's great. I think visually, I had the odd issue, like I was saying, visually moving around the world in terms of trying to figure out where I was supposed to go. But in terms of just if you were to give me a scene, and like we're saying, the skyboxes at the start of the game, I think they look great.
Oh. Yes, they do. Actually, that has reminded me, though, I had a lot of performance issues with my game.
I even wrote that down. I meant to ask you that because I didn't have any. What were you getting? That's interesting.
There'll be moments where the game would completely pause for 3 seconds. So,
I did get that. Yeah, I did get that. You're right.
Not necessarily in an entirely busy moment either. Sometimes it was almost like it was just loading and it just paused the whole game to load stuff in. And if we're talking about the way that the game looks, I have no issue with that. We've talked about when things get a bit muddy towards the end and everything looks the same. Yes. But the actual visual style I thought was really cool. The music, however, I thought was fucking garbage. I absolutely hated it. And I've seen a lot of people say they really liked it.
Yeah, yeah. This is another note that I'd written down to ask you about, because I'd say that one of the things that people kept calling out was how good the soundtrack was. But I remember you saying you weren't a fan of it.
Yeah, and maybe it's just because I played this mostly at night, so didn't want to wake baby / wife, so I had headphones on. But I think I would only ever really notice, like, when almost in the down moments where someone, it just sounded like somebody just leant on a synth. And I thought, every time I've stopped to pay attention to this music, it's just going wow, 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 and then it would go a little bit like gothic sort of gospel chorus-y. There'd be some kind of like chanting. But then I'm thinking, well, when I'm listening to Mick Gordon absolutely shred the fuck out of a guitar for doom, this is like, what is this trying to be? I just thought it was awful. I didn't get why people thought that was so good. It was just a noise. And it was just like looping and relentlessly boring. It was winding me up. Because you can't notice it when there's guns going off and enemies screaming at you. So like I say, in the moments where I'm lost and I'm walking around the same bit again to try and find the yellow fucking door, and I'm hearing, meow, meow, meow. Just fuck off. Don't get it. What about you? What did you think? I mean, you obviously thought it was better than I did.
Do you know what? Really, really strangely, I cannot recall the music, which means I have just not absorbed any of it whatsoever. I think I was perhaps so like wide-eyed, trying not to catch PTSD from playing the difficult sections of the game, that my brain wasn't capable of absorbing the music as well. It never jumped out at me, either good nor bad. I will say, though, that I'm not a particular, like, music in sound design only tends to jump out to me when it's bad. Fair. So obviously didn't offend me. So I don't know. I'm not really much help with that, I'm afraid. And I don't know why, because you were talking about the music and I was thinking, did I play this game with a podcast on? I was like, no, I didn't.
I often thought like I really wanted to do that, though. It's like, I can't hear this anymore. It's like, it's driving me insane. I need some different sound.
Yeah, it just didn't register with me at all. I think I was just too concentrating on the action unfolding the screen.
It's funny that you say about being like wide-eyed and stuff, because I remember multiple times, and I don't know if that's because I'm getting older, if there's something horrifically wrong with me. I'm not going to look it up, because that's what I would have done in the past.
Yeah, don't do it, Alex. Stay away.
But there were multiple times when I'd have finished this game and I was going to bed and my eyes would be like red and bloodshot, and I was just like, oh my God, this game has fucked my eyes from just like, as you said, constantly just like intense concentration and staring at these horrible pixels and flashing lights at fucking 10 o'clock at night in the dark. I think it was detrimental to my health, this video game.
As a video game,
at least my ocular health anyway. Yeah, good point. As Steve said on the Video Game Hall of Fame podcast, when he said how much he hated Dance Dance Revolution, I play video games to gain weight, not to lose it. So I guess, yeah, none of them are good for us, really.
Have you seen people play Dance Dance Revolution who are like genuinely good at it
in Japan?
The ones that like lean back on the, that's not dancing.
No,
it's kind of river dancing.
It is, yeah. It's really weird that's the optimum way to play it, and it is in no way resembles any kind of dance ever.
No.
It's like standing on hot coals. Like, it's really weird.
Yeah, it is.
I guess it's dancing the way that they used to say in like a mafia movie when they get a gun on you, right? They're like, dance, fool, and they just shoot your feet. It's basically
maybe
that.
Maybe
the Yakuza made the game.
Yeah. You're going to have you've got a good year coming up with Yakuza games.
Fucking right. Yeah, can't wait. They know what they're doing now. They've sussed it. They've done the Capcom jobby of, we have one part of the series that's always going to be the old school brawler beat 'em up stuff, and then we've now got this turn-based RPG version. We'll just keep alternating them so no one ever gets annoyed. Everyone always gets one or two if they like them both. It's like the old Resi 8 versus Resi 4.
What's the key differences between these things? Like, why have they got spin-offs?
So
they stuck with the combat mechanics, was weird in one of them. Have they stuck with that?
That's right. So yeah, the combat mechanics from the original Yakuza games, from all the way from like 0 to 6, was always like, you know, the sort of based off of, I don't know, like Shenmue style Virtua Fighter-y brawling where you're just smashing buttons and it's a real time action fighter. And then for Yakuza 7, they just decided to make it a turn-based JRPG that's like Dragon Quest. And that had a new protagonist. That was the first game that Kiryu wasn't the main character in. So they've now decided, right, any games that move on in the mainline series with the new character Ichiban, they will be turn-based RPGs. But they had the Judgment games, which had the old style fighting in it. And now they've done this Kiryu game that they announced at the whichever one it was, the PlayStation one, I think. And I can't remember what that's called now. But that is going to just be like, that's like a sort of a spin-off side game.
Right, okay.
And then the main game where you just saw Ichiban fucking naked in Hawaii or wherever he was, that will be like the next proper Yakuza 8, where it's a JRPG again. And
we were talking, great place
to jump in.
We were talking tough bosses at some points during this podcast. Tell you what, that boss in Yakuza 0 with a tattoo on his back, oh my God, that I find that hard. There's another one, yeah. I find tough.
They that was the weird thing about those games, is that like every normal enemy in the game was pathetic, and you'd get like there would never be any difficulty spike when you're walking through the streets and you're getting attacked by these mobs. You would just batter the shit out of them by like hitting them with a bike or whatever. And then a boss fight, they'd be blocking, they'd be doing grappling moves. Like the bosses were always just so hard, had so much health that they were a real like difficulty spike out of absolutely nowhere. Yakuza 3 is the worst for that. They are so hard in those games. And that, I think the guy you're talking about, you probably fight him about 6 times in Zero.
Oh, great. Have you finished with the Back in Time Yakuza game?
Yes. I finished that, I can't remember now, a month ago or so. That was really good. I really enjoyed that.
I think, samurai one. I don't know if I'll ever get there. I think that's one I'm happy to let slide. But yeah, Zero's the one I need to make a start on.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you want to do that, I'm here for it.
Need to do it. Next time we've got a space in the list, we'll add it. Because that'll make me play it. And I know, because I've probably played about 7 or 8 hours of it. I do like it, and I've got no idea why I stopped. I think I fell down a hole of playing that baseball minigame for hours and hours.
Yeah, I think I remember you saying that. There must have been something else that we played for this, or a new release came out and you just...
It's almost certainly something for this that's distracting me from it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what. Have you anything else to talk about this game? I think we've fairly covered it, and we've sort of wrung the life out of what was quite a short game, running the same things over and over again.
Yeah, I just... came out of absolutely nowhere for me. I don't follow anything to do with Warhammer, and I'm now looking at Space Marine 2 and thinking, yeah, I could get on board with this.
I think we might have to add Space Marine, potentially, see what's on the list when it comes up. But yeah, Space Marine 2 looks excellent, and it looks very Gears-like, so that ties really into something else that we do.
Yeah, but was really in the mood for this kind of a shooter.
It was a nice break, wasn't it?
Yeah, and just... one of the most violent and gory games I've ever played, and I loved it. That part of it was so good. Never got tired of just smashing tiny little enemies into a million pieces with a shotgun shot. Just incredible violence in this game. Well, again, when you think of Warhammer, you think of like, you know, neckbeard guys in a basement in a Games Workshop shop. You don't think that this is what's going to come from that. That's what they're all pretending they're playing, is like the most violent shooter I've ever seen.
Yeah, they are. That's what's all happening in their heads.
Yeah.
So don't ever upset a Warhammer nerd, because they have got dark corners of their mind they can go to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I suppose brings us, on that bombshell, to the end of another episode of the Winners You podcast. If you liked what you heard, and even if you didn't, why not give our numbers a bump by subscribing to our podcast on your podcast feed of choice? Or if you prefer to imbibe your podcast in a visual format, you can head over to YouTube and search for a Winners You podcast, where you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. If the podcast isn't enough for your bi-weekly dose of a Winner Is You chattery, you can also follow us on Twitter at Winner Is You Pod, and you can even send us an email to tell us how wrong we are about our gaming opinions by writing to awinnersyoupod@gmail.com. Alex and I also have Twitter at David Smiley1 and Super Thrillix. Any housekeeping before we get going? What's next up? And I think you did tell me what this was this week, but I'll let you tell the folks what's next on your other podcast coming up.
Well, we've just done the Video Game Hall of Fame, like, 10th episode, where we all picked a game each that we'd previously nominated and then forced it into the Hall of Fame, so that, without putting it to a Twitter poll, because they typically get ruined by weirdos. So that's I don't know if you actually listened to that show. You've not mentioned it to me, so I'm assuming you've got some backlog of something else.
It's on my backlog. I've got them all downloaded, waiting to be listened to.
That was quite a fun episode. We after we all put our own, you know, they went back and did the games that we wanted to put in. I made sure Mario World got in because it was robbed in the first episode anyway. We then we all picked another category that we're going to go for coming up. So we've got like four of those. I think we're going to do something like controversial games is one we're going to be looking at, which I'm really struggling to think of anything other than, what was the one I was
Postal is the obvious one for controversial games, or that Rockstar one that got banned, Manhunt.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's different ways to you know, what's the word, define.
Yeah, that's where the fun comes, I guess, in this one. Yeah. I guess a video game that did something you wouldn't be expecting it to do.
Yeah, Doom.
Oh, Doom
was pretty controversial.
Yeah. Wind Waker.
I've got as a, that's a fucking shout, actually, thinking about it. I got Stick of Truth as well, because I forgot they had that whole scene over here where it was like, they cut it
EU.
Out of Europe, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Wish we'd left the EU before that came along.
Yeah. That's why I would have voted for Brexit on the fucking
on that
day
when I got there. Yeah. I was so annoyed that I was being censored.
That was bizarre. I was livid. Then we're doing Hack and Slash. If I pick anything other than Bayonetta, I think I'll have had a brain hemorrhage. Open world, fuck me, open world is really hard. That I've, because even like, you know, there's a lot of open world games that suck that I don't care for anymore, like anything Ubisoft do basically. But there was a real boom period for open world games where they were everything. Mm-hmm. And you think even back to games like Crackdown. I fucking loved Crackdown.
Crackdown was so good.
Good was the world in that, right? And the powers and the climbing the towers and stuff.
They made a fun, made a fun game just running about collecting orbs, for God's sakes.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you think about, you know, Fallout 3 blew my mind when I first played that. But does Tears of the Kingdom count? I mean, yeah,
probably,
I could think
yeah.
about open world games for a long time and still, like, Witcher 3, is that great because of the open world itself, or is it great because of the story? I don't know what I'm going to
say. It's tough. It's probably great because of the story, but then I don't know if it's as impressive these days, but in its time, it was impressive because you could walk from one end of the map to the other end of the map and not see a loading screen. Like you just wouldn't get that in a games of those eras.
Yeah, that's very, very true. That one's going to be really tough. And then we're doing party games.
Fusion Frenzy for me, I think.
Depends how you define what a party
Mario
game is.
Mario Party? A party
yeah,
game.
you could probably put Smash Bros. That probably counts.
Yes. Yeah. WarioWare games, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so we did all of this, and then we have now put a poll up on the @VG_HOF Twitter feed where we're asking people to tell us what category we're going to do for the very next episode. We were really hoping that Games with Turnips was going to win based off of when Simon on the podcast just said that Mario 2 is the greatest game about turnips. And we decided we'll do that as a category one day, Games with Turnips. And I looked it up on Giant Bomb because Giant Bomb actually has a page of turnip games and there's fucking loads of games in that list. So we were hoping Turnip Games was going to win, but it doesn't look like it's going to. I think it's going to end up being bloody Strategy Games, which is right at the bottom of my wheel. It's not even in my wheel.
Yeah, that's... Now. Yeah. I was playing Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts.
I saw that,
today,
yeah. I messaged you earlier saying your Twitch feed was really random because you're playing like GTA 4 and Nuts and Bolts. I was like, what year is this?
Yeah, I've started playing GTA 4 in my own time because I was like, I've been looking at this for a while. I'd want to play GTA 4 again. I'm just going to have to force it. So I was like, right, I'm going to play it. So it was like a fiver. So I went and bought it. And then I was like, right, well, I don't like to start a new pod game before we record about the one we've just finished because it starts to mess with my brain. So I was like, right, how could I play something podcast related? Because that's what I usually do if I stream at lunchtime. without actually playing a podcast game. So I was like, well, Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, because we're playing Banjo-Kazooie next. So I played that, and there's turnips in like the first scene.
Ah, okay.
Around about his house, there's just turnips walking around the place.
Yeah, they're supposed that the giant bomb says there's turnips in Banjo-Kazooie, but I think it's an onion, which is the weirdest sentence I've ever said to like, and committed to recording. But I do believe it is not a turnip, it is an onion. So we'll see. But GTA 4, I think that city that they've got in that game is arguably the best they've ever done. Like, that version of New York that they created for that game is
so good.
Spectacular.
It's so good. And I was sitting thinking, I was like obviously just chatting to myself, but I was like, the story in GTA 4 is good. It's not. It is not good. I had to give myself a slap. The story is not good, but what is as good as any the GTA games is their characters are just so fun. Like, watching the cutscenes and watching these characters interact about nothing is entertaining. And that's what's fun about that game. Like, their depiction of New York is spot on. Looks wise, it's really looking its age. Like, at night, it just turns into a black and white game. I think that just seems to turn the sepia up or down, however that does. It just goes black and white, and then it's like, it just kind of looks the same. But it's still a fun game, having fun with it. I don't know how far I'll get through it, but I've been wanting to play it for a long time. So I was like, nah, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, I was pleased to see you doing that, because I know you've been talking about wanting to get back into that again. That's the only GTA game I've ever actually finished. I've never finished any of the other ones. Yeah.
Oh my God. I think the only... Of the 3D ones, I think I've done them all, and I've done GTA 5 more than twice.
Wow. Okay. Oh, I suppose if you count Red Dead Redemption, I've done Red Dead Redemption 1.
Oh yeah.
It's a fucking open world game. See, it's so hard.
Yeah. Actually, another thing, like, I know we've gone way off topic now, but like one thing that got me really sad today as I realized how good the DLC for Rockstar games used to be. Like, the DLC for Red Dead was awesome. Undead Nightmare was so good.
I think I need to play that.
It's so good. And then there was Lost in the Damned for GTA 4, and then there was The Ballad of Gay Tony. Both of those are epic. Yes. And then they just never did anything with Red Dead 2 or GTA 5. Not apart from multiplayer stuff. No, which is a real shame, because they were real highlights.
Mm. Did you... while we're completely off topic, and I don't know why this has just come into my head, but have you seen that they're going to fucking try and put NFTs in Madden and FIFA? Have you seen that?
No, what are they doing?
There's a... It seems like Nike didn't get the memo.
They're going to be cards.
They're going to be like helmets in Madden that have got like a bit of pink on it or something.
I thought we were over this now.
We are. NFTs, it's just like no one seems to have told, because it's Nike. They've got this like swoosh.nike or something, and it's like that's their NFTs, but they're not calling it NFTs at all. They are, because they've got ID numbers on the things that you, the digital shit that you're going to buy for FIFA or whatever. You know, different coloured boots for Ronaldo. But they know what they're selling, but they don't want to say it because they know that NFTs have got such a bad reputation. But their Twitter feed for it, for their announcing it, like, it's all the crypto bros like, oh, this is game changing. It's a mess out there. Stay insular, everybody. Stick with us in our echo chamber of hating everything that's not what we're talking about right now.
Start playing Banjo-Kazooie.
Yes. That's the next episode. I fucking can't wait. It's finally here. 65 episodes in.
We're doing this podcast
finally
and
got
it's
it.
Taking
yeah.
65 episodes to do it.
Yeah. And all the hundreds more we did in the past. We've still never really spoken about it until now.
And we've just done it.
We'll have done Diddy Kong Racing before that as well. We've done the two most elite games ever made.
I'm interested to see what stupid piece of tat I come out with after playing this game. Because usually after there's a game that we play and it just captures me, I'm like, I need some memorabilia for this. So I think I think I spent about 30 quid. On an amiibo for Diddy Kong, which is far too much money for that amiibo. But
what,
it's my favourite one.
What, recently?
Yeah, after we played Diddy Kong Racing, I went and bought a Diddy Kong amiibo.
I will show you some of my memorabilia for the next episode. I'll get it all out.
You've got... I wonder if there's a...
There's a Banjo amiibo, but I bet you that's not cheap. But there was another company that made like... their own version of amiibo that's not the same, and it's not got like NFC in them, and that one's quite good. Actually, I will go get that now. Hang on.
Oh, let's tell me about this. I'm going to go. I want to hear about this. I am going to look up the Banjo-Kazooie amiibo on Amazon, see what it's going for. £41.82
For a, what, the amiibo?
For the Banjo amiibo, yeah.
Oh, this is covered in dust. I'm a disgrace. This is called Totaku. Looks like it's actually made by Microsoft, but that, in terms of like a, not being an amiibo, but being, it's probably almost as good, if not better, than the amiibo anyway. He's got, even got the little Rare logo on his backpack.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So maybe try and see if you can find that. Totaku. They made quite a few like PlayStation and Xbox things, I think, to try and combat the amiibo boom of like little figures of game stuff that people like.
I've not seen the Banjo. Oh yeah, I see a God of War one here. Oh, there's a Bad Fur Day one.
Is there?
Yeah. Oh no. This is a hole I've fallen down.
Are the prices still reasonable or have they gone nuts?
Well, this Bad Fur Day is a first edition one. It's £42.
Oh yeah, that's a lot.
And now I've broken my Amazon search because I clicked on this Totaku thing, and you know when it's customers all also view these products, it's just anime porn busts.
Oh god, yeah.
Oh god, here's a naked one. Okay, I've ruined my Amazon. Well, time to burn that down.
That's gonna be. If anyone listening is a fan of Banjo-Kazooie, we are gonna do our very best to have like a real celebration of that game because we talk about it a lot. It's a big part of my childhood, and I still love it right now. So there's gonna be tier lists for the music. There's gonna be whole heaps of fun shit.
Oh, I can't
wait! It's
gonna
be a good episode.
It's one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah.
I think outside of the Mario ones, it's probably one of my favourite platformers. So, yeah, hopefully this is a good one. And on that bombshell, I've been David, he has been Alex, we have been A Winner's Shoe, and I'm out.
Keep gaming.